If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our seminar topic is, why do we do what we do? Why do we do what we do? What is that motive force that causes us to be that unique individual that we are, with our particular tests and preferences and predilections and our talents and our natural abilities? Where does that come from? That's what we're going to look at this evening. So let's start with a inner process. And as usual, take a deep breath, which draws the divine spirit right down to the top of your head and consciously links you with your divine essence, which breathed life into you at the first breath and made you a living spirit. And that's why you connect most easily through taking a deep breath with the conscious intention of connecting with God. So let's do that again. Take a deep breath. And flood that divine connection down through your nervous system, through your chakras, all the way down to the soles of your feet. Balanced, centered, grounded, and aligned. And ask that which is for your highest good this evening to be highlighted and brought to your conscious awareness. We're already starting to clear the throat chakras here tonight. Yeah, that's clearing. I can always tell when they're going to work on our expression because my throat will start to clog up. So just know that it takes great courage to see the face of God, because we have to look through all the many masks and masquerading, and charades, and behaviors that look like anything but God. We have to realize that that's a challenge, to look through and beyond all of that in ourselves, in the world, and in others, and tenaciously hold to the truth and conviction that God alone is all that is. And anything and everything else that seems to show up is something our monkey mind has projected as an image that we have bought into as a reality. And we know it's a false image because it brings up fear and every negative state. And that's the challenge, is to learn to discern between that which is the loving truth, which always brings a sense of relief and peace, and that which is the false evidence appearing real. Last week, we led you in a spiritual exercise that could be for you your mantra and your spiritual practice for the rest of your life if you wanted it to be. And I hope you will take time to listen to that show and to practice that spiritual exercise if you're at all serious in spiritual realization in this lifetime. And you must be, or you wouldn't be listening to me, because that's all I'm interested in, and all I'm going to be sharing with you is how to do that. That's the dance here. So why are we drawn to certain things that might repulse another person? Now, why is that? So we're going to be looking at the prime motivative force and incentive of your life. And this is something that you could use as a journaling exercise. As you ask yourself, what bottom line do I want to accomplish in this lifetime? What do I want my life to be about? What, you know, if you wrote your obituary, would you like to see you remembered for? And let's go into a pretend exercise, shall we? This is really not a pretend exercise so much as it's a revisiting of something that you did just prior to your incarnation. This is something we do, all of us, before every new incarnation. And we stand before a group of men and women who truly have our best interests at heart. We could call them masters or angels or the karmic board or the spiritual travelers or whatever you want to call them. But just know that they love you. They see the full picture of who you are, what you aspire to be, what you need to deal with in order to manifest that higher presentation. And they're going to be working with you to outline and to draft and blueprint the most excellent lifetime that can accomplish whatever it is your objective is for that incarnation. So put yourself before let's look at it like a conference table that you're sitting at. It's an oval table. And all of your favorite upline masters, angels, teachers, and guides are present. Maybe some of your relatives who have passed on before. Maybe some of these are famous individuals that you knew in another lifetime and have formed an alliance with. Maybe some of the avatars or great master teachers are sitting in. Who knows who you have sitting on your board of advisors? So you might want to look around and pretend as if you knew. You know, when you pretend into these things, you'll be amazed at what shows up. So pretend that you know who's sitting at that table and make a notation if you'd like. And you can go into this in greater detail later on. But who's showing up at your table? And they ask you, what do you want to learn in this incarnation? And you tell them, because at that level it's very clear to you, you've already had your life review when you passed over last time. And you saw very clearly in that life review where you fell short and how you could have been more loving and more forgiving to yourself and others. And you saw where you kind of slacked off and you could have put in more effort and where you could have chosen to not just couch down like in your comfort zone, but exercise a stretching point. You saw that clearly. You winced as you saw how your verbal abuse impacted and hurt other people. And you resolved this time to have a better go at it, to stay more present and aware. So again, what do you want to learn? And you tell them. And you're quite aware of your shortcomings and your weaknesses. And so when they ask, what would you like to overcome in this incarnation? What is the greatest area of challenge for you? Pretend like you know and make a notation of it. And what is your greatest strength? Or let's say if you had a line of least resistance, what would that be? And, of course, you know what that is, because that's what you naturally go to. Whether it's positive or negative, you'll go to that line of least resistance, which means the exercising of an energy so repeatedly that it becomes your natural reaction or response. So very often you will choose a life path that is the absolute polar opposite of those particular habit patterns that are the line of least resistance. That's why a really great, let's say, for example, vocal virtuoso that maybe is a great operatic singer in a past life may choose to come in tone deaf this lifetime, or with a, you know, a voice that, you know, quickly people will tell you, forget singing, that's not going to be an option for you, so that they choose a different path. Well, for example, a person that comes in like Doris Day, the movie star who was originally, back in the 50s, she came in with a desire to be a dancer. And she was a very gifted dancer, but then she had an accident which made it impossible for her to continue her dancing career. And so instead of going into dancing, which may have been her line of least resistance, she went into acting. And if you look at the old 50s movies, you'll certainly see Doris Day. And she sang and she acted, but she didn't dance. So the very things that we built into as strength, very often, the soul will choose a whole different direction in a new incarnation. So you're going to tell the karmic board which of the several sets of parents that have been offered to you you are going to choose and why. Yeah, believe it or not, you know why you chose those parents, whether they abandoned you or were, you know, abusive or really great parents or whatever the story is, or whether they divorced or met with an untimely or a timely death. Whatever, you chose those parents, and you know why you did. And if you go into the pretend that you know mode and just write down all of the ways that you can see that your parents contributed to the life lesson that you've come in to learn and the challenges you've come in to overcome, you're going to see the value of your choices. Now, you can do that same process with your mate if you have one, your friends, your siblings, even your children. Yes, your children also have come in and chosen you by your mutual agreement. So no matter how good or not so successful you feel you've been as a parent, you are the very best, absolute best parent for that child. Even if you're like a coke addict that's out strung out in the gutter somewhere and never even was there for your kids, that is exactly what they agreed that they needed most in their life. So you see, you can just let go all of that guilt and blame and criticizing yourself and judging yourself for and your parents and your children and your behavior, whatever it was or wasn't, with these individuals, because you're all souls learning mutually agreed upon lessons before you incarnated. Now that's why everything in your life is here to bless you and assist you in the direction that you have said before you incarnated you wanted to go. Everything in your life, when you get high enough in your spiritual inner awareness, you will bless and thank God for. You will see it all as a blessing. And that is something that is so important to remind yourself when you find yourself coming up against extremely challenging and difficult situations. Please remember that all things work themselves together for good, for those who love God. And it is only the lovers of God who stand consciously and make these choices. Because people who are still in that cycle of evolving into being truly human, who haven't awakened at all spiritually, they come under an unconscious law of karma that moves them in waves of souls into incarnation and out of incarnation and into successive incarnations until eventually they get to where you are who are listening to these seminars, to where you are consciously choosing a spiritual life and to be spiritually responsible for your creations and to move into your own Christ consciousness and self-mastering process. So why do we do what we do? You know, I think it's so interesting. You watch these reality shows, and why would a person choose and even enjoy wrestling with an alligator in a muddy slime pit? I mean, why? Why would a person choose to be a lion trainer? Or, you know, any number of really odd virtual reality kind of shows you see on cable TV today where people do the oddest things and they enjoy the strangest things. And I was thinking, you know, in terms of the alligator and the lion trainer, but, you know, they were probably reacting to a former incarnation as a Roman gladiator. You know, I used to be a circus performer, and I was quite adept at Roman riding. I could ride four horses at a gallop. No problem. Just came so naturally to me. I've always been an excellent rider. And I saw myself one time as a Russian Cossack, you know, in the Russian plains where they hang by one foot off the side of the horse and they vault off and on. Well, I did all of that in the circus, not to mention the Roman riding and everything else I did and the circus performing arts that I had practiced. But, you know, these things come in because of previous momentums and actions that I and each one of us have done in other lifetimes. So everything has an impetus from a prior action. And that's the meaning of the word karma in Sanskrit, which comes from the root verb to act or to do, kriya, karma. It's the action, and it's simply action. It doesn't mean good action or bad action. It's simply that every action produces an equal and opposite reaction, and that's your karma. And when you incarnate, you're given what is called adi karma. Adi means primal. In the Christian understanding, that would be what you'd call original sin. And it's not a negative thing. It's what gets the soul, which is very blissfully in the higher realms of consciousness, motivated enough to get down and get dirty so it can get experience. Souls are here, excuse me, to have experiences of all kinds, okay? The soul, to the soul, all experience is useful. It's of value, and it doesn't have a value judgment about that. So to get the soul going into its incarnational pattern, it comes in with a flaw, let's say an original flaw. The original flaw or original sin that we all came in as with a primal imprint is the one of feeling separate from God and the reaction that we had to that, which was to run and hide from God, and then to go on and behave as if there were no God and try to forget about the whole thing. And, of course, that is the whole karma drama that the ego self, the sleeping self, enacts, is the fear of God, running away from God, trying to hide from God, and using the universe and the realms of cause and effect and duality to play act all kinds of roles to distract it from awakening. But you see, that's all for the purpose of the soul having experience. So even that is part of the divine plan. You know, every way you look at it, you have chosen, and you want to participate in the experiences of soul. In fact, you could look at it this way. You are God having human adventures. Okay? You are God enjoying human adventures. And the soul doesn't wake up until it's pretty near the end of experiencing, because if it awakens too soon, it doesn't get the full benefit of the full spectrum of experience. So the difference between an old soul and, let's say, a soul that has just come into the Earth training arena is that the old soul has been there, done that, bought the beanies, kind of sick of the whole thing, doesn't have much interest in doing anything. It's kind of lazy, kind of unmotivated, doesn't know what it wants to do because it's like, I bother. And believe it or not, that's that divine discontent that catalyzes, you know, that final cycle of self-realization and God-realization. And then you have the young souls where they just come in from the Devic realms, or maybe they've been a fairy or a water sylph or one of the other elemental nature spirits. And boy, they're all gung-ho to dive in and get every kind of experience. They seem to have no discrimination, no discernment. They're just all over the map. And that's a good thing, because they're here to get as much experience as possible in each lifetime. So you see the benefit of this? You see why this is so great? And the Earth is the only planet, at least in this particular life zone, the solar system, it's the only planet. And according to Bob, it's the only planet in the cosmos, and I'm not going to argue with a cosmic avatar, but I don't know myself. I'll just have to quote him. That the Earth and the human embodiment is the only place by which we can consciously return to God as a conscious choice. Apparently, when we asked him about extraterrestrials and other planetary life forms, and he said they go to God unconsciously as part of their nature. It's like their nature just flows them in the God essence, but it's not a conscious choice. And the human being is the only one that has a mind. It has a higher mind, which you could call the high self or the soul. It has a lower mind, which you could call the ego or the false self. And depending on which one drives the motivation, depends on what the outcome is. So, you see, it's all good. You know, you can just use that as your mantra. It's all good. It really is, regardless of how it looks. So, again, you know, people are so odd. There's like 8.5 billion, that's what I'm guessing now, around that, souls on the planet in incarnation, and probably as many or more that are disincarnate, that are in the subtle planes around the Earth, and they're all busy doing something that they love to do. And I think, you know, of souls, for example, that may spend their entire life doing one particular thing, mastering an art form or struggling with some particular addictive pattern or you know, crusading for some issue in social injustice, or coping with some really challenging or toxic relationship. And then there's people who pick really odd. You wonder, you know, why would anyone choose, for example, to be like an executioner in a prison? But what if that was like a really privileged position in the court of one of the French kings and queens? What if that was like, you know, a really highly recognized art form or technique that was highly rewarded in the realm at that time? And what about a person that chooses to be a mortician? Well, that immediately brings to mind the Egyptian embalmers that prepared, you know, the elaborate funerary processes in ancient Egypt. So you see how your tendencies and even your choice of what you study and what you are involved with as an occupation, if you look carefully and you look in the higher consciousness, you can often trace it to a past lifetime. It's not necessary to do that, but you could. And even as karma becomes your obligatory rebalancing or addressing previous times you acted out of the negative self rather than the higher self, you shift from karma to dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A, which means to act with God, or righteousness, as it's called in the Western understanding. So you go from the law, living under the law, to living righteously through right action, through acting and ministering and serving with God. So that is the path that we adopt when we're ready to come conscious and come clean in our lives, when we're really ready to be accountable and responsible for how we act and how we speak and what we do with our bodies and how we deport and behave, how we deport ourselves in this world. So there you have your little exercise, your pretend exercise of, you know, and journaling later if you want to. I want to learn. I would like to overcome this, whatever. I am choosing these parents because, and then you write down why. I've chosen this mate, my friends, my siblings, my children, you know, all of that because. And just do a little journaling exercise. And the value you'll get out of this is gratitude and appreciation. You're going to have gratitude and appreciation, whereas before you might have had a complaint and a grouse. And, of course, complaining gets you more of something to complain about, because when you're complaining, you're not taking responsibility for managing your life. So have you ever wondered what causes people to do what they do, or why you seem predisposed to certain habits and predilections, and why you have maybe a talent that you never really learned? I came in with so many talents in this lifetime because I'm an old soul. And gosh, there were so many things that I could do and do well without really much training that I really had a hard time trying to figure out what I really actually wanted to do as a profession. So actually, instead of choosing one profession, I've been all over the map. I've done a little bit of everything. I've lived about 8, 9 different lifetimes, like a cat, 9 lives. I'm somewhere in that count where I have really reinvented myself and lived a totally different life for periods and cycles of years. And at some point, I completed that life. It was fulfilled, and I moved on to do something else. And you may find, if you're a very old soul and you're completing your incarnations, as I am, that you might find yourself doing things like that too. For example, you might marry more than one time. You might marry many times. You might have moved a bazillion times and lived in all kinds of different countries and conditions. And gosh, I've lived in everything from palaces to a tent to a semi-tractor trailer in the circus with 9 other girls. You know, you create for yourself a variety, and truly that is the spice of the life of an old soul. So very, very few of us, you know, are born in the same town and live in that same town for their whole life, or, I won't go into any more of that because it's possible that you could, but let's say that usually the more experience a soul wants to have, the more variety they elect to undergo in any given lifetime. That's not an ironclad law, but it seems to be often what takes place. So the global media and the internet and cable TV has allowed us to peer into the lifestyles and mindsets and cultural views of people all over the world. And even in the most remote indigenous tribes. So we are learning that we are one race of humanity sharing one planet Earth as our collective home. And we are one race of humanity created by one divine creator. And in fact, in highest truth, we're embodiments, we're incarnations of that one divine Atma or spirit. And yet, we're all so uniquely different in our personal characteristics and, you know, in our ability level and our interests. So is there one major defining factor that causes all of these uniquely personal modifications? And I believe it is. And what it is our previous actions and our previous choices. And when you set an energy in motion, you have given eternal life to that momentum, which will always keep perpetrating itself to come into balance and completion. And then it shifts to another energy. But all energy seeks to be resolved in universal balance and come to a point of rest in the absolute love that is. So everything is out there moving through this quantum universe to merge into the one love. And all things ultimately have come from that love, and all things, all energy, all embodiments, all entities are destined to return and merge with that supreme love. Not to lose individuality again, but to move into the state that's known as Sat Chit Ananda, or being, awareness, and bliss. That would be the state of the omniversal God force. So every present condition was set into motion by a previous action, and every action produces a reaction. And so our life, until we have exercised conscious soul awareness, which also means you're being responsible for what you put out energetically and how you manage and govern yourself, will produce a reaction. And we have to eat that. You know, so happy eating if you're a busy creator. Eat heartily, because until you love it all and forgive it all and bless it all, you're stuck with it all. Yeah, you're stuck with it all until you have learned to love it all and bless it all. And you're given free will. You're not a robot. You're given free will to choose good or evil, loving or harming. You know, have at it. But you have to pay the price of your choosing. And sometimes that's very unpleasant. So you create for yourselves your own purgatorial and hell worlds by choosing against the love, choosing against loving. So the lower self is negative by nature. It's selfish, it's self-serving, it's greedy, it's lustful, it's the abuser and user, that lower self, that negative ego self. And the higher self or soul is loving by nature, it's happy by nature, it's positive, it's affirming, it's selfless, it's giving, it's all those good things. So whichever one motivates you is the one you feed the most regularly. If you feed and foster your negative self, then that's what's going to be predominant in your nature, and you're going to have a really miserable time of it. If you're feeding your soul awareness and doing everything you can to love all and serve all, then you're going to be experiencing a life that is more and more guided and clothed in grace and ease and loving and graciousness. And, you know, it takes great, great good fortune, good merit, the accumulation of many meritorious deeds to naturally come in loving God, to come in as a devotee of the Lord, where you have a heart that's soft and tender towards the beloved, and where you are by nature seeking God from your very childhood. That's a very, very it doesn't necessarily have to be an old soul. It could be a younger soul, too, but it's younger meaning less experienced with the earth realm. But it, for whatever reason, has accumulated enough positive energy and merit that it naturally is predisposed to the spiritual life. It's a natural devotee of the Lord. Now, interestingly enough, you cannot judge a person's spiritual state by their outer appearance or necessarily their outer state. I remember a mother who came to a spiritual teacher I know and was complaining that her son was, you know, an alcoholic, and he was lying abed all day in a drunken stupor and making her life miserable. And basically, she was just living a life of cleaning up after him, and she was unable to help him. So she came to the teacher to complain. And he said, if I were to tell you that this is the very last thing that this soul has to experience and work through, and then he could be completely liberated and move into the higher realms of spirit when he passes from the body, would you still be complaining? And I was like, oh my gosh, no, I wouldn't. And the teacher said, well, that's what's going on with your son. He's a very great soul, but this is the one thing that he hasn't experienced, that he wants to experience. He wants to go through this, because he wants to understand and have empathy for all of humanity. And so those of you who may be in a similar situation with a husband or a child or a sibling who may be struggling with an addiction or a mental condition or psychosis or whatever the debility is, whatever the disability is, whatever it is, realize that you have mutually agreed to come into this relationship, to work this through together. Your selfless care and loving and compassion and prayer and being there for that person in whatever capacity you possibly can be, for as long as it seems to be what you're guided to do, that is your spiritual practice. That's your sadhana. That's your spiritual practice. That's your service. That's your love made manifest. And for that person that's going through that hellacious experience, have the faith and the confidence that they are divine incarnations, having a human adventure, and support them however you possibly can. And when you've done what has been required or called for or chosen, the situation will shift. Some people do need to be put in professional facilities. Some do need to go into rehab. Some do need intervention. It's not like you just passively sit by and sing Kumbaya, but every situation is different. And the old saying goes, is what you can cure, you don't have to endure. But if you can't cure it, then have the wisdom to trust that, you know, something's being worked out here. And above all else, don't judge. The minute you judge something, you have saddled yourself with an assigned experience of karma that's going to be on your plate. If not in this life, it'll be coming up soon. Because as long as we judge something, we're going to have to develop compassion by going through that experience. And the highest state that we can manifest as a human being is empathy, which is different than sympathy. Sympathy is weakness, siding with a person's weakness without faith. Empathy is coming into agreement with that divine part of that person that's greater than anything in this world and standing with them in faith. So have faith in your children that they are powerful souls and that they are capable of managing what they have chosen and selected to eat on their karmic plate. Have confidence in them. Have faith in them. Speak victory into them. Don't criticize them and judge them and condemn them. Give them a hand up. Give them a pat of affirmation saying, oh, you know, you can do it. You're strong. You're a mighty man. You're a mighty woman of God. You can do this. And build them up in their spirit. You know, keep placing the light of the Holy Spirit and the Christ with them. Keep putting the light with them. And it will stand in there and fortify them in those times when they cry, Uncle, you know, help, you know, I can't do this alone, right? You can't do it alone. But with God, all things are possible. So these are the ways that we work with people that are really going through difficult things. I also looked into the past life of a person who is in a very difficult situation where the person is in material need, and everyone seems to be turning a deaf ear to that person and not really extending help. And when I looked into the past life, I saw that this person had been a slave owner and had turned a deaf ear to the needs and the supplications of these poor people who were under this slave owner's domination. So it's interesting how the karma returns in something that is very similar, even though it might not be exactly the same situation. You know, there's always a reason. Or, for example, a person who has manipulated people psychically as a sorcerer or a black magician or practiced evil forms of witchcraft and has messed with people's minds through giving them potions or causing them to engage in things through psychic manipulation. Very often these people will develop some form of mental illness. They'll be dogged with some psychoses. And that's the karma. You know, if you mess with another person's mind, you know, you get to experience what it's like to go mad and be subject to the demons of your own psychotic states. So again, you work with people, you let the professionals who are skilled in working with people who know how to give the necessary medications and things that do help people very much when they're in psychotic states and their chemical imbalance in their brain is way off. There are certain practices in the mental health profession and in psychiatry and psychology that are very, very good, very skilled at working with these levels. So know that God works through all practitioners, whether they're allopathic doctors or homeopathic doctors or acupuncturists or massage therapists or past life regressioners or whatever. Everything can be used and worked to assist people when you're guided to that particular methodology. And of course, if you're under the grace of a spiritual master who truly is a spiritual master, not someone who just says they're a spiritual master, but someone who truly is a perfected Satguru, like Sai Baba, for example, who is in God consciousness, or the Lord Jesus Christ, or any number of great luminary masters that are on the planet today, if you're under their specific care spiritually and you have formed a commitment to them as your spiritual teacher, they will hold back your worst karma and dole it out in little bite-sized chunks in an easier form that you can work through in this incarnation. They can wipe out a lot of your karma if you're faithful in your spiritual practice, if you do the repetition of the name of the Lord, which, as I said in the last show, eats up your karma like hungry little Pac-Man, gobbles it up. The more you repeat the sacred names of the Lord, or you say the rosary, or whatever your mantra, your sacred repetition of God's name is, there's many, I've given many in the last show, that name of God consumes, quoting Sai Baba, the name of the Lord consumes mountains of sin. In fact, he told us that if we have problems, never to think about them and don't talk about them to another person, but surrender them to the Lord, and every time they come into your mind, repeat the mantra. In that case, it was Om Shri Sai Ram. And as you repeat Om Shri Sai Ram, it eats up and consumes the negative energy around the karma. And that was told in an interview to people who had made a commitment to Sai Baba to be his devotees. And so that's the easy way to work through karma, is to come under the mantle and the shelter of a true son or daughter of God who has realized God and has the ability to work with you spiritually. And by their fruits you will know them. So look at the disciples around a master and see, you know, what is the fruit of this master? Do they have greater peace? Do they have greater love? Do they have greater harmony? Are they more selfless? You know, we are known by our fruit. And the fruit of the Spirit is goodness, kindness, love, forgiveness, generosity, compassion, you know, kindness, peace, joy. You know, the fruit of the Holy Spirit. So 99.9 and probably 0.9% of all humanity is being automatically driven by karma set into motion unconsciously at an unconscious level by previous choices that they don't remember. And in some cases, that karma had its origins thousands of years ago, maybe even back into Atlantis and Lemuria. Yeah, certain karma right now is Lemurian, which is at least 80,000, I think it is, 80,000 years ago. And Atlantis, the last portion, sank roughly about, between 6 and 10,000 years ago. You know, it was a successive process. It just didn't, you know, all go down at one fell swoop. And so many of the present-day scientists that are doing Frankenstein scientific Borg experimentation and mind altering and really crazy stuff, cloning and mixing genes and all this weirdness, that's actually Atlantean karma. And that aberration and mixing of the genetic codes was what brought down the fall of Atlantis. And so you see some souls back on the planet working through that karma and kind of heading in the same direction. And, you know, you can pray for them that they awaken this time and don't repeat those actions. And if you're in a position where you can speak and influence those areas, you do so. Again, if you're in an area where you're given the motivation and the impulse to speak into and address a situation, then that's your dharma. Then you do that. But don't mess with situations where you don't have, you know, that inner impetus to be involved. You know, keep to your own path and your own divine directives. So the karmic law is entirely just and requires addressing and balancing by the individual and individuals who originally set it into motion. And so literally, absolutely literally, every conflict, war, and crisis situation seen in the world and experienced in our own personal life is karmic in nature. And it's involving those very individuals who have a karmic debt to pay, and they need to bring their action into balance and resolve it. So that's why you pray, and you don't judge, and you don't polarize against nations or religions or creeds or cultures. Just don't do that. The minute you polarize in a position of againstness and take an adversarial position, you are holding that very polarity in place, and you're feeding and fortifying it. As a light worker, your job is to place the light with it and pray. Jesus always said to pray for your enemies and to overcome evil with good. And in the Course in Miracles, he said that we cannot heal a person from their insanity. You know, he calls the ego totally insane. You can't heal insanity by seeing it as insane, but only by perceiving the sanity of that person. So again, you hold the vision steady of what you want to see manifest that you know is in alignment with God's will. And everything that's in alignment with love and fellowship and one accord and the unity and harmony of all life, that is God's will. When you can hold that steady, you're doing the greatest service. And meanwhile, take care of your own life and bring it into the greatest resonance of harmony and loving and balance and peace and goodwill that you possibly can. Leave no place that you've been less than when you found it. Always leave it happier and brighter and filled with more warmth and love and positive energy. Let that be your personal contribution to life. Even when you're shopping or putting gas in your gas tank, you know, smile at people. Have eye contact, you know, send a beam of love from your heart to the cashiers and the people who bag your groceries. And know that everyone is fighting their own battle. They have their own karma. They have their own heartache. And move their life as one that brings comfort. And then you'll be filled with the Holy Spirit, which is the divine comforter. So ask to be a source of comfort to people. Baba says that relationships are designed to increase each other's bliss, each other's happiness. So do everything in your power to be a purveyor of goodwill, a promoter of bliss and harmony. And don't feed and foster conflict. Be silent when people go into, when you're sitting in a restaurant and maybe people are in conversation and they start to rag on somebody or castigate their character or slander them, don't participate in that. And if I were you, I wouldn't go out to dinner with those people again. Or I'd get up, excuse myself, and go to the bathroom. Or, if you know them really well, you could say, you know, Baba says that it's wrong for us to speak ill of another. That creates a like karma for ourselves. And, sometimes people are humble enough they can take that very gentle rebuke. But it's important that people realize that they're held responsible for their criticisms and their judgment and their negative opinions. I mean, today you go on the internet and it's amazing. People are just so unconsciously spreading negativity and negativity. Why? I think it's probably always been inside them, but it didn't have a venue where it could be seen by the whole world. You know, on Facebook, I absolutely will delete a friend if I see that they're starting to rag on the president or spread evil tales about anybody. I don't care who it is. God dwells in everybody. I don't care who they are or what they are. There is a spark of divinity in every soul. And every soul is facing their karma and doing the best that they know how, given their understanding and their state of evolution and their karma. So, yeah, I just won't permit it in my space. Somebody sends me an email, that's a negative email, that's the last they'll hear from me. You know, I won't engage people in that level at all. You know, I'm not about engaging in adversarial conflicts or negativity with anyone. But, you know, I'm interested in merging with divine love and being one with that. And so that's where I place my energy and my focus. And you know, you only have one mind. It's been shown that you can only hold one thought at a time in your mind, even though there are, I forget how many millions of thoughts that we process every day. They flit very quickly. And you can only hold one in focus at a time. So I can focus on the love of God and the divinity that's inherent in all life, or I can focus on the false selves of people and all the things they're doing wrong and all the crazy things happening in the world. And then I'll be promoting more of that separation and fragmentation in my own essence. Or I can be filling myself with God realization and fill myself until God is all that I see, and then I'm in God consciousness. So that's a choice I've made, and that's a choice everyone can make, if that's what you want. You know, I stood in front of that board, and I said, I want to be free. I want to be free. This lifetime, I want spiritual and physical and mental and emotional and every other form of liberation. I want to be free. And so they said, well, that's easy. Love it all. Bless it all. See only the good and the divine in all things. And you're free. You're home. People want to go home. You know where you're home? Where you love. When you are loving, you are at home. And when you love all beings and all the worlds, you can travel throughout the vastness of the cosmos. And wherever you go, you're at home. And that's how we live in the Ashtar Command. That's how we live in the higher planetary realms and civilizations that hasn't forgotten the inherent divinity and kinship of all life. You've forgotten it here on this planet. But it is a universal principle that all life is united in one flowing fabric of divine love. Everything is upheld and sustained by the love of God. And the love of God is the only thing that heals all, balances all, redeems all, saves all. Love is literally the savior of its all. And so, start the day with love. Fill the day with love. Spend the day with love. End the day with love. That is the way to God. God is love. Live in God. Live in love. And you live in God. And you awaken and find, you know, you've been God all along, pretending to have a human adventure. So I hope this has been of assistance to you. It's a very, very direct path to God, to love it all and bless it all. And know that everything in your life is there because you have created it, allowed it, requested it, promoted it, done it to another, or have called it forward so that you can heal and balance it in this lifetime. And I love this statement of Jesus from A Course in Miracles where he says, the holiest place on earth is where an ancient hatred has become a present love. So let's see our beautiful brothers and sisters in the Middle East laying aside all of their bombs and their weapons and all of that. And for the first time in many, many centuries, let's see them coming across all of their barriers and barbed wire fences and so forth and embracing each other as brothers and sisters. And let's see them sharing the wonderful land of Israel as one people, as one family, as one, as, you know, they're all the children of Father Abraham. So let's see them happy and enjoying all of the good that can come through cooperation and taking care of one another as loving family. So let's go out chanting Om Shanti Shalom. Salam. Let's do all three of the major world religions. Om Shanti Shalom Peace be to all the worlds, all the universes, and all the beings everywhere. May all awaken to the love that they are. Adonai.